Let's talk science now. And the deadly Ebola virus first hit Africa in the mid-70s. It's a highly infectious disease. It causes severe fever and internal bleeding. One of the big mysteries has been how the virus actually penetrates the cells. Now Dutch and American scientists have come up with some answers. Dr. Chris Smith, our weekly science guru, joins you from Cambridge. Chris, hello there.
Hi, Fran.
Chris, can we say the mystery of the Ebola virus has been solved?
Well, there's no mystery in science that's ever completely solved. We just come up with hypotheses having asked the right question. So this will inevitably do what one famous anthropologist said to me whenever he finds a missing link fossil. I said to him, is this the answer? And he said, no, all it does is turn one big gap into two smaller ones. And that's sort of what this does to a certain extent. But it's two very powerful papers in the journal Nature this week, which might give us a clue as to how we can actually turn the 70% mortality rate that accompanies Ebola into a much more manageable or hopefully zero number. The first paper is by a researcher called Jan Karret, who's at the Netherlands Cancer Institute. And what he and his colleagues have done is ingenious, because they took some cells and they added to them a retrovirus. These are viruses that insert themselves into the genome of cells. And by randomly inserting these viruses into various bits of the genome, they were able to disentangle or deactivate different genes in the genome. And then taking those cells and superinfecting them, then with the virus wearing the outer coat of Ebola, they could ask the question, well, does Ebola get into these cells or not? And the cells that it didn't manage to infect, they then concluded, well, there must be something wrong with some of the genes that are important in that process. In other words, that retrovirus they added first must have deactivated a gene critical to the process. Then all they had to do was to ask, well, where has a retrovirus inserted in this cell to deactivate the appropriate gene? And they tracked down a number of different genes, but one in particular is really important, and it's called the NPC1 gene, which is actually well known. It's a gene which is linked to an inherited disease called Niemann-Pick C1. And Niemann-Pick's disease, these people have a problem putting cholesterol in the right place in their cells. And it would appear that Ebola gets into our cells by latching onto this particular gene product inside little bags called endosomes, which occur in the insides of cells. So the virus sits on the cell surface. It encourages the cell to take it inside in this little bubble called an endosome. And by latching onto this NPC1 gene product, it then pops the bubble, and that ejects the virus nucleic acid out into the cell so it can hijack it. So that was the first paper. And it's strongly supported by a second paper, which is by James Cunningham, who's a Harvard researcher. And what this group did was they took a whole massive bunch of molecules and they started screening them against cells. So they would preload the cells with these molecules and then see if Ebola could penetrate the cells. And they found a couple of chemicals which could very potently block the access of Ebola into the cells. And then they asked, well, what are these molecules binding to? And hey presto, they're binding to the same gene, the NPC1 gene, that the other group had found via a different route to be critical to this process.
I feel a vaccine coming on. Chris, and the eating habits of modern humans, we spend less time eating than we should. I'm not so sure about me.
Hard to believe, isn't it? Yes, well, this is a paper. It's in the journal PNAS this week. It's by Chris Organ and his colleagues at Harvard. And they've asked the question, well, when did people first start cooking? Is this a modern human trait, or can we trace this right back in history? And the first thing they did was to say, well, how long do we spend eating? And it turns out that humans actually spend about only 10% of the time eating that they should, based on our body size. So why are we able to spend so little time eating? Because we eat high quality cooked food, because cooking releases more calories from the food. Then they said, well, okay, one of the other things that cooking does is make food easier to chew. So we have far smaller molar teeth than we should. So then they said, well, when did these small molar teeth begin to crop up in humans and our ancestors? And looking back through the fossil record, Homo erectus, around about 1.8 to 1.5 million years ago, is our first and earliest ancestor to have these really small molars. So their suggestion and their conclusion from this is Homo erectus probably was cooking his and her food, not just modern humans.
Okay, so that's why our molar teeth are smaller. Chris, thank you very much. Fascinating as always.
Thanks,
Chris
Fran.
Smith is a virologist from Cambridge University, and he is our science guru here on Breakfast. You're listening to Breakfast. It's 18 to 7.